consider this thought by the proverb writer for just a moment before we begin. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 22, the writer says, "He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord." Hopefully, that is indeed the case. Well, husbands, can you say that in your wife that you found a good thing? Wives, can you say that within your husbands you have found a good thing, and through that relationship you've obtained favor from God? I would encourage whatever position you may be listening to this morning from, don't tune out. Maybe you're thinking, well, I've already got a good marriage. It can be improved upon as we go to God's Word and consider precepts and teachings from God's Word. Husbands, I hope you've done a better job than me. Whitney told me yesterday, "I think you need to go back and listen to your sermon on husbands again." You had a good week, but apparently my memory's failing with old age. I don't know. But I hope that you've done better than me. We're going to talk this morning about the virtuous wife. And you may remember in Ephesians chapter 5, where we will be spending some of our time, as Paul is giving instruction to the husband and wife, he correlates that relationship to Christ and the church. And technically, the answer for any relationship marriage problem could be found in Ephesians chapter 5. Verse 33 makes the statement that summarizes what Paul's been talking about. You remember in Matthew chapter 22, where they come to Jesus and they ask Him, what's the greatest commands? What is the greatest command that's been given? And He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commands hang all the law and the prophets. That is, every other command that God has given hinges on those two commands, to love God first and to love your neighbor as yourself. You might say that the answer to all marriage problems hinges on what Paul says here in Ephesians 5:33. Nevertheless, each one of you in particular, love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband's. And so you might say that husbands loving your wife, wife respect your husband's, on those hang all the principles and teachings of marriage. This morning we're going to consider the attributes of the godly wife. We're going to start in Genesis chapter 2. Where a woman makes her first appearance, you may be turning to Genesis chapter 2 and following along as we proceed through these various passages. But there in Genesis chapter 2, we find the purpose for which God created woman. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18. Before that, you've got Adam in the garden, and there's no comparable being to which he can relate, to which he can share and enjoy life. And God's paraded all of the animals before him. There was nothing there. He gave them all names, but he found within there no being that was comparable to him. And therefore God says in Genesis 2 verse 18, it's not good that man should be alone. I will make a helper comparable to him. The world tells us, you go and you look at the Bible and you derive from the Bible what a wife is to be, her role within that relationship, her role within the home, then it's absolutely that of a second-class being, you might say. The traditional wife, as it's described in the Bible, is devalued by society and devalued by the world. The reality is, wives, the role that you are in can be that make or break factor for your relationship, for your marriage, for your family. You go look at Genesis chapter 3 and you find out the influence that the wife that God gave Adam, Eve, the influence that she had over him. It was her to whom the serpent came and whispered in her ear and said, you need to eat of that fruit that God said you can't eat of. And it was then Eve, the wife, who goes to her husband and who through her influence, the power of that influence she has over him, she eats of that fruit, she takes that fruit to him. He then eats of that fruit. You might say that through the influence that Eve had, that of the wife, the paradise that Adam and Eve lived in came to an end. And yes, Adam was held responsible for that. Adam was the one who was told that he had transgressed, but it was through the influence of his wife that he made that decision. You can make your marriage the gift, wives, that God intended it to be, or you can make it miserable. And the reality is, just as Adam needed a helper comparable to him, we men need helpers comparable to us. And Adam realized that very quickly. As you consider living life on your own, it's challenging. It can be done. Some can succeed and some do well at that, but living life on your own is challenging. But having someone to go with you as you endure the bumps and the bruises that this life throws your way makes it just a little bit easier. Ladies, just pretend this morning that you're going to revamp this entire building. You're going to pull up the carpet and you're going to get rid of these seats and you're going to put in pews, and that you have been designated to be the one to take care of all of that. You're going to get one person that can help you. Now, do you want someone that's going to sit there and complain about how hard the task is and not pull their weight and they're going to be lazy when you've got this monumental task in front of you? Or are you going to want someone who does what you ask them to do, who has a happy attitude, willing to help, working their hardest? You know, what kind of partner would you want if you were given a task like that? Well, obviously, you'd want someone that's going to pull their weight. Obviously, you'd want someone that's going to help you accomplish what the goal is. Now, you think about your relationship to your husband. What kind of helpmeet are you being? Are you being the kind of helper that you would want to have? Are you being perhaps one that makes that task a little bit harder? Let me turn to Proverbs chapter 31, please. Proverbs chapter 31. As we consider the role of the wife, that is the helpmeet. And that is by no means, as we're going to see throughout the course of the lesson, I hope you understand, that is by no means a role that is to be undermined or to be devalued. There in Proverbs chapter 31, look at what the proverb writer says, King Lemuel says, about the value of a hard-working wife. In verse 10, who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. He says her value that she possesses in bringing to the marriage relationship is above and beyond that of precious rubies, precious materials that we may have. And I think every husband that has a good wife, he should be able to attest to this statement that yes, money may bring him a lot of pleasure and do him a lot of good, but a good, virtuous wife is so much more valuable than that of material provision. Let's look at verses 13 through 15 as we find out some characteristics that this hardworking wife is going to possess. Beginning in chapter 31 and verse 13, consider these words regarding the virtuous wife. She seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. She's like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She also rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. So we see regarding this virtuous wife that she is a hard worker. They say that marriage is 50-50, don't they? That's a false statement. That's the problem with a lot of marriages. Both husband and both wife are bringing 50-50% effort. Marriage is a 100% effort. Both parties need to give all that they have. The husband's going to provide. What if the wife does nothing but sit at the house eating bonbons and watching what soap opera is popular these days? Days of Our Lives, what soap opera does some of the ladies watch maybe? What if that's all she were to do? What if that's what she brought to the marriage relationship? You know, going to work, and I can attest, going to work, making the living, that is the easy job. My grandfather used to tell me, going to work, a man's job is easy. A man works from sunup to sundown, but a woman's work is never done. And those who were fulfilling this role that the virtuous wife is fulfilling, you can understand and you can appreciate that while the man may go to work and he works from 8 to 5 or 8 to 6 or whatever it is, there's always something to do around the house. There's always something to do to help the husband, whether it may be work that you do that is of a physical nature, or whether it be keeping the house or raising the kids, whatever it is, there's always work to be done. And a wife that doesn't work hard, she's not going to help the relationship. She's not going to help the marriage. And then you throw kids into the mix. That just makes things more challenging and more difficult. But a wife that doesn't work hard, she's not going to put out an effort that she should in raising her children. And whatever contribution, ladies, your relationship may be to whether it be keeping the home, raising the kids, working secularly, whatever it is, the proverb writer says that the virtuous wife is going to be a hard worker doing whatever she may find her hand doing. And the value of that wife that works hard is beyond that of rubies. We look in verse 20. as we find out, not only is she a hard worker, and as we see other characteristics she possesses, she extends her hand to the poor, verse 20 tells us. She reaches out her hands to the needy. Blessed to have many ladies like that here, that reach out their hands and that are kind and demonstrate compassion and hospitality and generosity. And I personally can say that I've benefited from many of the ladies that are here in such a way. In part, I think we see here the writer demonstrates a key difference between, or key natural inclination between men and women. This virtuous wife, she's compassionate, she's kind. Wendy and I, whenever we were preaching over in Pine Bluff, getting ready to leave one Sunday after services, and Whitney's looking around the corner, and we're looking, there's this girl, 13, 14 years old, sticks her head out from behind the church building. And we kind of look at each other and wonder, what's that about? And I say, well, she'll be okay. And so we start driving down the road, and we get a little ways, and Whitney says, no, you got to turn back. She looked like something was bothering her. She looked like something was wrong. And so we drove back, and come to find out, the girl had ran away from home. But I was content to just go on down the road, but my kind, compassionate wife, I said, no, we need to go back. We need to see what's going on. We need to check on her, make sure everything's okay. You know, this wife here that we're talking about, if she's kind to strangers, how much kinder is she going to be to her family, her loved ones, her husband, her children? You know, the effect of that being, they will be well provided for. They will be cared for. They will be nurtured. They will be strengthened. And so we see that she's kind, she's compassionate, she's hardworking. And look at what verse 23 tells us. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. What we see about the virtuous wife, her purpose within the relationship being that of the helpmeet. The virtuous wife helps her husband to grow. It's hard to keep yourself in line. A faithful wife is going to help her husband grow. One thing is known about this husband. We don't know his name. We don't know what he's done. But we know he sits at the gates. That is, he's in this position of prominence within the city. Now, how did he get there? Well, I believe that the inference here that we are to make is that through the support and the help and assistance of his wife, who's helped him grow, that's why he's there in those gates. That's why he's well known. That's why he's respected. A virtuous wife's going to help her husband grow. And it can be in a variety of different ways. Whitney and I used to preach once every couple months at a church in Rapid Ridge. And there was this older couple there that we were good friends with and loved to see their relationship between the husband and the wife. But every once in a while during Bible class, the guy would get to talking and he needed to be quiet. And his wife would give him the old elbow and tell him to be quiet. A good wife's going to do that when that's necessary. She's going to help her husband grow. She's going to help him become a better person. And I think I learned a lot from that couple. But that's what a good wife, a virtuous wife, is going to do. And so we see her role standing out within the home. You see the benefit of a virtuous and faithful wife here in Proverbs chapter 31. Her price, as the proverb writer says, is so much beyond that of rubies. And so we see within that relationship, she is a helpmeet to her husband. As we consider her role, though, in that relationship, we find that to be submission. Now, before all of the ladies run out or run up here and attack me, let's look at 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3, I'd like to look at the first 6 verses because I believe Peter here outlines for us what the virtuous wife, the submissive wife, is supposed to look like. 1 Peter chapter 3, beginning in verse 1, please read with me. Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Do not let your adornment merely be outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be that hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. For in this manner in former times the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. And so we see within the relationship, the marriage relationship, that of the husband and wife, these complementary roles. We went and we looked back in Genesis during our study of the husbands. It's the role of the husband by divine origin that he lead within the family. He is to be the leader. That burden was placed upon him. The complementary role that the wife possesses is that of submission, that of being submissive. And it's a shame that this role that the wife was given within the home, within the family, is passed over by many of those who are religious. And it's sadder even than that, not only the religious world, but oftentimes the reception that the husband and the wife have by those who are within the church. Oftentimes, submission that a wife is supposed to possess, well, it's written off as some cultural leftover from the first century writings. Things aren't like that anymore. We live in a different world and things have changed. And what complicates talking about biblical submission is the misuse and the distortion that's taken place throughout the centuries. You see, men have taken this passage from 1 Peter chapter 3, and they've taken that, and they've used that to place their wife under their thumb and to say they are to rule with iron fist. And that's absolutely the distortion of what we see the husband supposing to do. As he comes to this passage and as he looks here at the submission that his wife is to possess, Christian men have taken this passage to essentially make their wife a slave. And that's why it's hard to talk about submission as it pertains to the context of God's Word. Notice who this command is to, and you'll understand immediately. A lot of times a man takes this command, or in times past they've taken that command, and they say, see, you are to submit. Who is that command to submit given to? Note, it does not say, husbands, make your wife submit. That's not what this text here says. The command, wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands. And the problem is that through the years and times past, and even today, husbands have looked at this and said to their wife, I'm making you submit. And that's a complete misinterpretation of what we see here. What we see here is the beauty of the complementary relationship that God has designed and the command that God has given to wives, telling them that they are to submit to this role, not to the husband that he's supposed to make his wife submit. But this distortion that comes about because of this text has made it easy for people to dismiss this subject and call it antiquated. But within the realms and the guidelines of what we see God establishing it, we find it to be a beautiful complementary thing. Let's consider for just a few moments some of the things that submission is not. We see that submission is not, and ladies, you may take note of this, because I believe that because men have misinterpreted this, sadly, there have been some women who have misunderstood what biblical submission is about. Submission is not agreeing with everything that your husband said. And there might be some who said, well, if I'm going to be submissive, I can't say a word against him. I can't say anything in opposition to him, because if I do that, I'm not being submissive. That's a false conclusion that some have drawn from this passage. But if you look here at what Peter's saying, you look there in the first verse, well, we find out this wife that he's commanding to be submissive, she's made a choice that her husband is not. She's doing something that he is not doing. Verse 1 tells us that this submissive wife, she's a Christian, and he's not a Christian. You've got their two completely separate views on life and how one looks at the world that they live in. And yet this wife is called to be submissive despite the fact that her husband is not obedient, despite that he's not a Christian. And so we see here from the get-go, to say that she can't disagree is absolutely false, because she's made this commitment to Jesus and he's not done that. You know, submission does not mean that you can no longer think for yourself. Some might translate it to mean that, but that's absolutely not what it means when you look at what God says that submission looks like. The worst husband in the world thinks perhaps that submission means a woman can't think for herself. And that's false. This woman here, she's thought for herself. She's made a decision. She's made a choice. She chose Jesus. And her husband did not choose Jesus. We're told he did not obey the word. She thought for herself. She acted for herself. She realized the importance of that relationship with Christ. And she said, I'm going to commit to Jesus, despite the fact that my husband hasn't made this decision himself. She can think for herself. She can act for herself. And submission does not mean that you just leave your brain at the altar when you say, I do. That's a false understanding of what submission is. False understanding of submission is saying that, well, I can't change my husband. If I try to make him change, then I'm not being submissive. That's false too. You won't find that here as we're looking at the submissive wife. Some say, well, it's unsubmissive for me to try to change my husband. Verse 2 tells us that's what she's supposed to be doing. But what verse 2 tells us is how that is accomplished. It's not through nagging. It's not through repetitively making requests. But that's not how she tries to bring about change within him. How she tries to bring about change through him, Peter tells us, is through her chaste conduct, her good behavior, her good example. And submission is determined by how she tries to bring about this change. Not the fact that she tries to bring it about, but the manner in which she tries to cause her husband to change. And the great beautiful paradox here is she's not taking her decision and beating that into his head persistently. What she's doing is she is passively going about what she should be doing as a Christian. Her submission, her yielding, you might say, is what's going to bring about the response. Where he understands, he sees the relationship, he desires the relationship then with Christ. And it's not through just taking it and beating that into his head. But to say that I can't change my husband because then I wouldn't be submissive, that's not what biblical submission is. The wife who's going to be submissive, when she tries to change her husband, is going to go about it in the right manner, however. Submission doesn't mean that you put your husband's will before Christ's will. I've been told stories about people in the past whose the wife was a Christian and the husband wasn't a Christian, and he made it downright complicated for her to worship God, to go to church. He would get in her way when she tried to leave. He would let the airs out of her tires so that she couldn't drive to church. He set himself against her commitment to Jesus. Now, you stop and you think about that, and some might say, well, I can't disobey my husband. No. You look here and you see that you have to put God's will above that of your husband's. As Peter said, we should obey God rather than man. And the wife puts Christ's will above her husband, above all else. Submission to the husband is always second to that of submission to God. Submission doesn't mean that you get your spiritual strength primarily through your husband. Now don't get me wrong. Being a good husband means that I'm going to build and sustain faith and hope and love within my wife, and I'm going to do everything that I can to help her become the virtuous wife that the proverb writer talks about. But it does not mean, wives, if your husband is not submissive to God and he doesn't help facilitate that relationship that you have with God, that therefore you're just destined to be weak. That's not the case. You see, the wife's relationship, her spiritual strength doesn't come from her husband. Where it comes from is it comes from God. That's what verse 5 tells us. In this manner of former times, holy women trusted in God. You see, she didn't rely on her husband for spiritual strength. She relied on God for her spiritual strength. And so just because your husband may not be doing the things he should, does not mean that you are destined to be weak. Your strength comes from God. It does not come from your husband. And then lastly, submission is not acting out of fear. The last part of verse 6 there, Peter tells us, Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. True submission is not born out of fear. You know, a man may have his wife under his thumb, but that's not submission. That's obedience, and that is the antithesis of what God says the marriage relationship is to be like. True submission is born out of love, born out of fear. It's born out of freedom. I have this choice to oppose my husband. I have this choice to set myself against what he says. But I choose to yield. I choose to submit. And let me tell you, for those who would give submission a bad name and would say, well, that sounds like something I don't want any part of, would you consider this? Would you consider this submission is best seen and best demonstrated to us through Jesus Christ? And we're told, and you may be turning to Philippians chapter 2. This is biblical submission at its greatest. And as you consider the husband and wife relationship and you consider the role of the wife to submit within that relationship, this is where we see submission best demonstrated for us. You go look at John chapter 1. We're told that Jesus was God. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. Jesus was divine as much as the Father was divine. John chapter 10 verse 30. Jesus says, I and my Father are one. Jesus was one just as God. And so you turn to Philippians chapter 2. And we see here the role that Jesus played within that relationship in correlation to the Father. Paul says in verse 5, let this mind be in you which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, But he made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant and coming in the likeness of men. Would you look at Jesus and say, because Jesus was submissive to the Father, therefore he was second class. He was second rate. He sat backseat to God. Would you look at Jesus and say that? You know, nobody in their right mind would say Jesus is less God than the Father because his role in the relationship and in the plan was to submit. So why would you look at the wife who's commanded to submit in that relationship with the husband and the wife and say, well, she's second rate. She's the one being oppressed. It makes no sense to draw that false conclusion. True submission is born out of love. It's born out of a desire to do what God has commanded. Not only what God has commanded, but what God has first shown us how to do. Kind of interesting to consider that God Himself, Jesus Christ, had to submit. And then, as a result of that, the wife is commanded that within that relationship, her role is to be that of the one who is submissive. In that husband-wife relationship, what you've got two individuals that have become one. Both physically and spiritually, there's one goal and there's one purpose within their relationship. And they're both working toward that one goal and accomplishing what they've been told by God. Submission is the divine calling of the wife to honor and to affirm her husband's leadership. Submission does not undermine. If Jesus were to have undermined God's authority, yeah, God sent me to the earth, the Father sent me to the earth, but I don't want to be here, I don't want to do this, I'm doing it because I have to do this. If He would have undermined the authority of the Father, it wouldn't have been submission, would it? Submission does not undermine. Submission is the disposition to follow the authority that a husband is given by God and an inclination to yield to his leadership. And I say inclination because God was perfect. And so Jesus could fully submit to God. We as husbands in that leadership position are not perfect. And we may say and we may do things and we may lead in such a way that is not in accordance with what God has commanded. And so submission being the inclination to yield to that of the husband, whenever that husband makes a decision that is sinful or that would cause that wife to sin or transgress, then she has to say, I can't do that. My submission is first and foremost to God. But you see, within that relationship of the marriage, the wife is to be in that role of submission. And then lastly, we see her attitude within that relationship. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 33. Back over there for just a moment if you would. Let the wife see that she respects her husband. Now, depending on what translation of the Bible you have, your translation may say fear. The Greek word translated there for respect is phobia. You might say, well, that sounds familiar to a word that we have, the word phobia. That is a fear of something. And yes, that's right. And some may look at this and say, well, if that's the case, isn't the role of the woman to be afraid of her husband? Well, no, it's not. There's a couple of types of fear that we can talk about. There is fear. There is fear that we have before God because of who He is, and when we consider His might, that God can separate us eternally from Him, and so we are afraid. We might tremble in response to the power of God. But on the other side of that, there is a respect that we have. And it's that version or that definition that Paul is talking about here when he says, let a wife see that she phobios or fears or respects her husband. It's not talking about a fear because of the position he's in or that he's stronger than her. What it is it's saying that she is to respect her husband. Respect needs to be the actions that guide that of the wife in her relationship with his husband. And as it turns out, respect is one of the greatest needs that a husband possesses. There was a doctor by the name of Willard Harley. And he wrote a book that some of us here, I'm sure most have heard about. Some may have read. It's called His Needs, Her Needs. And essentially, in a nutshell, that book takes the relationship of the husband and wife and says, okay, these are the wife's greatest needs. And he's, I don't know how many hundreds of hours he spent observing case studies and talking and mentoring and all of those things to come to a conclusion to say these are the needs that women have in a relationship of husband and wife. These are the needs that a man has. Now, one of the most significant needs that husbands have in that relationship is respect. That's one of the greatest needs that they have. And so this wife, she's commanded to respect her husband. And in doing so, she reaffirms the decisions that he's making. If she's not respecting his decisions, that's going to cause problems. That's going to cause self-doubt. Not only that, but when she respects his decisions, she's giving him strength to make those hard choices. Because some decisions are easy, but sometimes when you're leading a family and you want to do what's best for people, it doesn't always involve things that are popular. But however, a wife that respects her husband, that submits to his, whenever they align with God's word, that submits to his decisions, that she's making those right choices that are challenging to make, she's making them somewhat easier to bring about. And then lastly, she's helping her husband to fulfill his command to love his wife. Can you imagine trying to love someone who you didn't respect? Who didn't treat you in such a way that they should be respected? It's hard to love a person like that. And as it turns out, on the other side of the coin, while respect is one of the things that's most significant in the husband-wife relationship for the man to have, love is one of the most significant needs that a woman has. Kind of odd. You go back over here to this 2,000-year-old outdated book where God says in a nutshell what Dr. Harley has determined through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of study. Women need to love their husbands. Or women need to respect their husbands. Husbands need to love their wives. It's kind of interesting to see that God's known that all along. And if you find a home in disarray, there's a good chance that you're going to see a husband that doesn't love his wife and a wife that does not respect his husband. I'd like to look at one last passage, that being in 2 Samuel chapter 6, if you'd be turning over there. 2 Samuel chapter 6. I'd like to read several verses from this passage here and there, and I'll give those to you so that you're best able to follow along. I'd like to begin reading in verse 14, 2 Samuel chapter 6. This is after the Ark of the Lord has been returned to Jerusalem. And we see in verse 14, David danced before the Lord with all his might, and David was wearing a linen ephod. Now look down at verse 16 with me, if you will. Now as the Ark of the Lord came into the city of David, now remember David's dancing in front of the Ark, Michal, Saul's daughter, looking through the window, saw King David leaping and whirling before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. Jump down to verse 20 with me. David returned to bless his household, and Michal, that's David's wife, Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, "How glorious was the king of Israel today, uncovering himself in the eyes of the maids of his servants, as one of the base fellows shamelessly uncovers herself." So David said to Michal, "It was before the Lord who chose me instead of your father and all his house to appoint me ruler over the house of the Lord, over Israel. Therefore, I will play music before the Lord, and I will be even more indignified than this, that will be made humble in my own sight. But as for the maidservants of whom you have spoken, by them I will be held in honor. Therefore, Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no children to the day of her death." So we see here this exchange going on between David and his wife, Michal. You've got the Ark of the Covenant, which had been gone for over 70 years, finally brought back home by King David. And verse 14, as we're reading along, David's celebrating, he's dancing before the Ark. Michal, his wife, sees what she's doing. It says she despised him in her heart. In verse 20, she goes and as she speaks to David, and she lets him know what's on her mind. She might have spoken in a lot of ways. But she goes and she uses sarcasm and she insults him by saying essentially he has made himself undignified in the eyes of the people by doing this, by dancing before the Ark of the Lord. She might have spoken to him in a way that was more kindly, more respectful. And as a result, her response and her concern might have been better met. And she's angered, so she deals with him in that moment of anger disrespectfully. And David strikes back and he says, "You think that's bad? I'm going to be even more undignified than that." He responds to her angry retort with his own anger. And in verse 23, we see that Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no children to the day of her death. Oftentimes I thought, well, that was God's doing because she's obviously displeasing to God. David's celebrating because of the happiness that the Ark of the Covenant is coming back. And that was God's doing. No, that wasn't God's doing. That was David's doing. Michal was no longer in that position as wife in response to the way that she spoke disrespectfully to her husband. Now, don't get too lost here in the details, because David didn't respond like he should have responded either. That's not the point. The point is that this disrespect made by Michal to David caused the relationship, husband and wife relationship, to come to an end, essentially. And we see disrespect manifested in a number of ways. It doesn't just have to be verbal disrespect. It can be disrespect even in one's thoughts. And some may say, well, as long as I just think it, it gives me an outlet for dealing with the frustrations that I have. Look here at Michal and David. You see the result and the danger of having those disrespectful thoughts to one another. I remember my mom told me when she was young, an older lady, and I don't know where this wisdom came from, an older lady came to her and said, well, your husband's going to get on your nerves, and there are going to be times when you're angry at him. Let me tell you how I deal with that. Whenever I'm doing his clothes, washing his clothes, I spit in his clothes. You may laugh at that, but what's the attitude behind that? Is that not disrespectful? That is. And I'm not even going to go to where that marriage is today. But the result being, just because disrespect may not manifest itself in verbal conversation, it can still have a very negative effect on that husband-wife relationship. The tone that you use when communicating. A wife can say, yes, I'll be happy to, but she can say it in such a way it isn't very well received. And she's everything but happy in what's been spoken to her. She can talk negatively behind his back. That shouldn't be done. Paul says, wives, respect your husbands. These things shouldn't be taking place. She can undermine his authority. Children that pit mom and dad against one another. Dad says, no, you can't go do this. Well, they run and they ask mom, and mom says, yes, you can. That's undermining the authority of the other. And it can work on both sides of the scale. The father can undermine the authority in the relationship that the mother possesses. But that undermining of authority, that's disrespectful. A lack of open communication, that can be disrespectful as well. Whitney, whenever she was back at Bryant teaching, she told me one day they got some bonus checks. She got a bonus check and she said, you know, I've got this bonus check and, you know, I'm going to put it in the bank and whatnot. And she told me she couldn't believe it, but there was some conversation going on in the teacher's lounge. These ladies that taught alongside her said, I'm not going to tell my husband about this. I'm going to take it. I'm going to use this for whatever I want. You know, that's that close communication there. She couldn't believe it, but that's how disrespect can manifest itself in the husband-wife relationship. And respect is the attitude that dictates how one speaks or thinks or communicates and interacts with someone else. And that brings us to a question I want to ask before we close. Does respect in that relationship have to be earned? Does respect that the wife is to show the husband, does he have to earn that? The answer, yes and no. I should, by the way I treat my wife, I should earn her respect by how I love, how I lead, and how I guide. But let me say this, and ladies, please listen. You are to respect your husband whether he deserves it or not. The reality is, and this is real life, I, in my role as a husband, don't always act as I should. Most of the time, the reality is, husbands aren't going to act perfectly. And some wives may say, if he wants my respect, he's going to have to earn it. Now, you open up Ephesians chapter 5, and you tell me, when Paul is speaking to the wives, where he qualifies that command, wives, respect your husband, by saying he's got to earn it. He's got to treat me nice, he's got to love me, he's got to remember my birthday. Paul doesn't qualify that statement, just as he doesn't qualify the statement or the command that husbands are to love their wives. They're to love them whether they're lovable or not. Wives, you are to respect your husband whether he deserves it or not. This is God's command, and we need to remember it's not to our spouse that we're answering, it's to God. God gave us Christ when we needed Him. He didn't give us Christ when we deserved Him. If your husband doesn't deserve your respect, give it anyway. God's commanded it, for one. Secondly, if he's not acting like he deserves it, he needs it more than ever in that moment. And we're told, 1 Peter chapter 3, that the way that the wife wins her husband is through her chaste conduct. There's no such thing as a perfect wife. There's no such thing as a perfect husband. All too familiar with that myself. But we've seen some goals from God's Word that wives are to strive for in that husband and wife relationship. And my encouragement would be to those who are in that relationship, you probably have a good marriage. But it can be made better by studying from God's Word what that role of the wife is supposed to be within that marriage relationship. You know, your family will benefit from that. Your husband will benefit from that. You will benefit from conforming yourself to what God has said the relationship is to be like. Now, if you've lived in violation of that command this morning, make that right with your husband. But first and foremost, make that right with God. If you're not a Christian, then consider what God's done for you. The church is the bride of Christ. And the blessings are only found for those who are in the bride of Christ. And so God calls this morning. Won't you accept His call? Won't you listen to what He says as He stands at the door and knocks? Jesus gave His life so that we might be free from sin. But it's only those who respond in obedient faith that will have their sin washed away, that will have their sin forgiven. You can be baptized into Christ this morning. You can respond to that command, that invitation. You can be added to the Lord's church. You can be part of the bride of Christ. It's for the bride. It's for the church that Jesus died. And if you're outside of that, then you don't have the protection of the husband that is Christ through His sacrifice. If you're here this morning and you need to respond to the invitation in any way, we would invite you to do so as we stand and as we sing.